PPCC podcasts are supported by Pepperdine's Graduate School of Education and Psychology, offering an online hybrid doctorate of education in organizational leadership on campus in West LA with attendance only twice per term. gsep.pepperdine.edu.
From 89.3 KPCC, this is Take Two. I'm A. Martinez. Today, we start with the latest on the wildfire raging along the Santa Monica Mountains. The Woolsey Fire has burned more than 90,000 acres. Two people have died, and 370 structures have been destroyed. At this moment, firefighters say it's just 20% contained. The fire moved pretty fast, forcing 250,000 people to flee from Agoura Hills to Malibu. Yesterday, though, despite the fire being active in many spots and high winds kicking up, some residents were able to go back to their home neighborhoods around Thousand Oaks. And so we took a drive up to the area on Sunday morning to check in on how that community is holding up, not only because of the wildfire, but a shooting that also killed 12 people at the Borderline Bar and Grill just last Wednesday.
We just got past a checkpoint, a CHP checkpoint at Valley Circle, and this is one of the eeriest things I've ever seen. This is one of the busiest freeways in the world, and there's no one on the road. We just opened up the window of the car to take a picture of a charred hillside, and the smell is awful. And we're not even close to where the main damage is and where the fire is still going, so I can't imagine what it's going to smell like when we get there.
Okay, to the left.
Oh, wow. All right, to the left of us, as we're getting close to Westlake Boulevard to exit, it is just a giant wall of white smoke.
We're in Thousand Oaks, right by a checkpoint where people are trying to get through, but they're being turned away by the CHP.
Excuse me, sir. Hi. My name is A. Martinez with KPCC Radio. Do you mind if we talk to you for a second? What's your full name?
Myron Hura, H-U-R-A.
Do you live in this area?
Yeah, my house is down three streets. Three houses down here.
Three houses down. What did you see around here? Was it pretty bad in this area?
Well, what happened is basically is I evacuated when it was evacuation. It was about a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. Came back because it was open. And I'm watching basically to make sure that all this backup that's there, if they start moving in that particular direction, what if they evacuate again because my wife is getting in a wheelchair.
Okay, so you're just standing on the corner just making sure that this plume of smoke doesn't start heading in this direction.
Right, I've been asking the police continuously if there's an evacuation order in this area because basically if that happens, I have to leave.
Well, thanks for your time.
Okay.
Officer, do you mind if we talk to you for a second?
Sure.
It's okay.
First name is Mike. Last name is Throgmorton. It's Throgmorton.
Officer, now we're on the corner of Westlake and Devonshire. Where are people trying to get to? I've seen you turn away people from going through here.
Most of the people are trying to get into Sherwood or access off of Petrillo Road here. The other half of people are trying to get over into Malibu. All access from this point beyond is for just the police and fire personnel only. As far as if they want to get over there, they're being denied access.
I think you got to give someone else the bad news right now.
Is there any indication when we might be able to access Carlisle Canyon?
Not at this time.
Do you have any idea what's going on up there?
Well, I know there's a bunch of down power lines. You know, the fire's starting to kick back up over here as well.
It's picked up?
So, yeah, earlier it was completely clear up there. I didn't see any smoke.
Yeah.
The wind started blowing again, and then
everything started coming up again.
That
now, yeah. All right.
All right, sir.
Keep going then.
Seems like everyone's pretty reasonable when you tell them that they can't get through.
Oh, yeah. You know, they understand. It's a fluid situation, so things are constantly changing all the time. Most people are very understanding of that.
Okay, so, well, officer, thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
Thanks.
From there, we drove out. That's when the Santa Ana winds picked up. There were a few points where I actually had to grip the steering wheel with both hands to regain control of the car. But we made a quick stop to survey some of the damage along the hillsides.
We've parked at the wind is now very strong enough to knock us over a little bit. We're at the Oak Park Community Center. We parked at the parking lot. Gonna go right behind the center to a hillside that is charred. Try and get a better look at the mountains and the hillsides. It's just ashy and black everywhere. It's just like one seared long path of fire damage. It's hard to breathe. It is really getting hard to breathe over here.
Around the corner, we found a church. The fire melted and curled much of the metal sign in front of the Church of the Epiphany. The only word that's clear enough to see anymore is Episcopal. We also could see the dark scars where the flames scorched the cross outside the garden, stopping just tens of feet from the church doors. In the parking lot, we caught Sherry Bland just as Sunday service was letting out.
We had to evacuate the other day ourselves, so.
What have you been told about maybe the rest of today and the rest of the week?
Yeah, it's supposed to be, you know, windy the next few days. And when we started our church service this morning at 10, our
you
vicar,
had services this morning? Mm-hmm, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, people were here being very grateful that we have our church. And our vicar, who was so good, Greg, and Greg Brown, and he, you know, he assured us that we were safe in there. And matter of fact, I think fire people came around and, you know, checked the perimeters with anticipating of the winds coming.
We hopped back in the car to survey more damage. In the mountain areas of Agoura Hills, the flames were gone, but many parts were still smoking and smoldering. In one area, a yellow Mustang stopped along the curb and two teens with face masks rushed out carrying water bottles.
Can we talk to you guys for a second?
I'm Justin Crawford.
Joey Barr.
Okay, so tell me, what are you guys doing here?
So we're just kind of looking around for hot spots, making sure it doesn't catch on any brush, trying to put out little ones that we can.
It's definitely a flammable area, so if we can get the possible embers out before they can catch on the trees, it's gonna help a lot.
Do you guys live around here?
Yeah,
yes.
I live right by Ladyface Mountain.
Oh, so you're right nearby, right? So where were you guys when this happened? What we're seeing?
We were just driving by.
You were just driving by.
Yeah, we saw smoke rising from the ground. And I just picked up a case of water bottles. So
Just in case, for doing this?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, has the fire department told you guys it's okay to do this? Because it's one of the things I can imagine that might not want to see people doing this.
No, we just want to help the community.
Looking for the small ones, just in case.
All right, guys. Well, good luck. I'll let you guys back to putting the water on the hillside. But thanks a lot for stopping and talking to us.
Of course. Right, thank you so much.
Finally, down the road, we turned down Liberty Canyon. Off in the distance, we could see towers of smoke rising up from the mountains. We stopped in a quiet neighborhood where some people were calmly walking around. They had been evacuated days before, but were allowed to return. On the side of the road, we met up with Sylvie Belmond. She lives there, and she works there. She's a reporter for the local newspaper, the Thousand Oaks Acorn, that's been covering in detail all the tragic news that's unfolded in the area this week.
How are you, Sylvie?
Hey, yes, I am.
Hi, Amy Martinez.
Just caught some really good footage there of homeowners up on the hill that stayed there to save homes. Oh. So they always say leave and evacuate when they tell you it's time to go, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, seems like some people in this neighborhood have stayed behind and they went around and used hoses to try to put out hot spots and things like that. It's conflicting.
How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about it? I'm thankful that they did, because I don't know that the little bit they did before the firefighters got here may have saved our homes.
Right. Now, Sylvie, you left, you evacuated.
I did. So the night before when I came home, we had just finished putting out a paper with a tragic story. 12 people killed. Of course, the killer died too. And this was tragic enough, putting out that. Then in the afternoon, you hear about fires starting. And at first you think, oh, yet another fire. They'll just get it. But it's as wind picked up, it just kept on progressing. And here I am putting out my paper, finishing all that. So then I get home. And I see the news about this fire really expanding and moving fast. And I'm thinking, okay, I got to think of a few things to pack. You know what? At that moment, you kind of you spin around a little bit. You don't know what to take. I took my computers. I took my passports and some important documents. You know, a box of photos right in my photo albums. Put it in my car. Fell asleep at 1 a.m. Got up at 2 with the police coming around on the loudspeaker, telling us to get out.
Now we're into Friday morning now.
That was Friday morning,
okay,
at 2 a.m. Thankfully, we had some really kind friends that put us up.
So when you got back to your home, though, how did it look? How did it held up okay?
It's intact right now.
Okay.
It is, but you know what? I think we're not out of the woods, as you can see.
We've got ash. We've got ash all around
fires,
us right now, and there's
fires. We had a hot spot that was burning up there, but thankfully, there was one fire truck that went up, and it looks like they addressed that. So it's amazing to think that they're still able to be here while they're fighting the fire, the front lines in Malibu.
So Sylvie, what's next for you right now? What are you
What's next for me is I'm gonna go to work tomorrow.
You're gonna go to work, okay.
I'm already working right now.
Uh-huh.
So I'm gonna go edit a video that I just did. Because again, it's about telling the story and keeping people informed as much as possible within the realm that I have here.
Well, Sylvie, thank you so much for taking a second to help us with our story. Sylvie, thank you very much and good luck.
Okay, you're very welcome.
There's more coverage of how Southern Californians have been coping since the Woolsey and Pill fires broke out last week. Just head to our page, laist.com. That's laist.com to see all of our stories. And if you've been affected, please share what you've been seeing. Tag us on Instagram at Take2Show.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Pepperdine's Graduate School of Education and Psychology, offering a doctorate of education in organizational leadership, developing graduates with the knowledge and ability to transform organizations for optimal success and growth. Offering an online hybrid format in West LA with attendance only twice per term, tailored for working professionals. Classes start January 7th. Apply by December 1st to be considered for a $2,000 scholarship opportunity at gsep.pepperdine.edu.
Back now with Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I'm A. Martinez.
This is not the new normal. This is the new abnormal. And this new abnormal will continue, certainly in the next 10 to 15 to 20 years.
It's a repeated refrain in Southern California this weekend as the Woolsey fire swept through neighborhoods from Thousand Oaks to Malibu, moving from the 101 to the sea in a matter of hours. Now, this is in addition to the massive, fast-moving campfire up north that has killed 29 people and destroyed 6,700 structures. And wildfires seem to be burning up more frequently and with more intensity. So what is going on? For that, we turn to KPCC environmental reporter Emily Guerin. Hello, Emily.
Hey, A.
Now, we've talked about this before, but what's contributing to the intensity of the fires? President Trump tweeted yesterday that, quote, "With proper forest management, we can stop the devastation constantly going on in California." Emily, does that argument, no pun intended, hold any water we're experiencing in Southern California lately?
So first, pretty much all the worst fires are wind-driven, right? So we have the Santa Ana winds. They're blowing hot air from the east to the west, which is why you saw both the Woolsey fire and last year's Thomas fire run super fast out to the ocean. But the winds are normal this time of year, right? So there has to be something that's different. And climate scientists tell us that we're in this kind of drought deluge cycle now that can make wildfires a lot worse. So we had the six-year drought, which ended in 2017. That really dried out or killed a lot of trees and bushes. That provides a lot of fuel for fires. But then the next winter was extremely wet, right? And a ton of grasses grew, and that provides kindling for fires when the grasses dry out over the summer. And then this year we had another dry winter and an extremely hot summer. So this cycle just creates fuels for fires. But A, I think the most significant thing, at least in Southern California, is that there's just so many more people living in fire-prone areas.
Yeah, absolutely. People are just building homes anywhere. There's a patch of land where they can build them. Now, President Trump tweeted yesterday that, quote, "With proper forest management, we can stop the devastation constantly going on in California." Emily, does that argument, no pun intended, hold any water?
Well, no, and especially not down here in Southern California, because the fires aren't actually burning in forests. They're burning in chaparral and brush ecosystems. And we don't, quote, manage those ecosystems the way you might manage a forest that's up high, like in the Big Bear area, by removing trees. And even up north near Paradise, I mean, this year's wildfires are either burning in oak woodlands or they're actually in forests that have had some management. But the thing is, even when you do remove some trees out of the forest to make them less dense, it doesn't always help during the really severe wind-driven fires like what we've been seeing, you know, recently.
Now, one of the big questions, Emily, that people have been asking lately is why cities keep burning. So what's the answer there?
Yeah, well, oftentimes the cities that are burning, so like Ventura, parts of Santa Rosa, and now Paradise, they're actually built themselves in very high fire risk areas. So there are these maps that Cal Fire makes showing what they call very high fire hazard severity zones. And those are places where wildfires are likely. And all of the houses that burned in the Thomas fire are in one of those zones. And so is the entire town of Paradise. So it can feel like, wow, you know, why are these suburban neighborhoods burning down? But actually, they're in very risky places to begin with. So they're often right next to big swaths of undeveloped hilly land where fires can start and then come quickly into the city.
All right, let's talk about then what can be done to mitigate what's happening, starting with how to fireproof a house. What steps can homeowners take?
you can't actually fireproof a house. You can kind of make it more fire resistant. And I also think it's important to sort of know why houses do burn in fires. And it's because embers are igniting them. So you want to look for places where embers will be drawn. And that's often places where the wind has blown other things. So if you walk around, you look for where pine needles or leaves have accumulated, that's where embers are going to go. So you want to make sure there's nothing flammable in those places. And then experts say you should focus on the area that's 5 feet out from your foundation. And you want to make sure that there's nothing flammable there. And also that the ground is really more or less bare or covered with some kind of like succulent or non-flammable plant.
And I think, Emily, one of the bigger questions should be reconsidering where we build homes, right?
So if you build a house in a dangerous place, you know, like on a ridge surrounded by open space, all the mitigation things we just talked about, those things are just a band-aid. And actually, we build thousands of new houses in these areas in California. And it's because the people who are approving the new development, so cities and counties, you know, they aren't suffering the costs when and if those places burn down. So the local officials that approve new housing, they get a lot of the benefits, they get new property tax revenue, they often getting donations from developers. But when there's a fire, it's actually the federal government that pays for the costs of firefighting, you know, in a big wildfire like the Woolsey fire. And even homeowners, most people have fire insurance. So even homeowners are often not suffering the costs of building in these places.
That's KPCC environmental reporter Emily Guerin. Emily, thanks a lot.
Thanks, A.
The Woolsey and Hill fires have forced more than 250,000 Southern Californians to evacuate their homes. Now, while many are still waiting to go back, some people have been given the green light, including Deborah Klein Lopez in Agoura Hills. We spoke to her on Friday after she had evacuated. She's with us again. Deborah, thanks for taking the time again.
Thanks for having me, eh?
Deborah, you're back home now, which I'm sure is a relief. You were able to go back last night. What was it like going back?
Well, we got the order last night from the L.A. County Sheriff that the 101 was going to be reopening northbound at about 9 p.m. So Agoura Hills and Westlake Village residents who live north of the 101 were able to go home at that time. So many of us came home last night, and some of us are still trickling in today.
One of the things, I was there yesterday, in your area yesterday, one of the things that was kind of weird to feel is how isolated you guys are with the freeway being closed the way it is. Does it feel like you're on an island in a way?
Well, you know, we're in the Conejo Valley. We're in a very delicate spot where we're surrounded by mountains on all sides. So it is a little bit scary when fires come in from all directions like this. We do feel a little isolated, which is why, like I said to you a few days ago, you've got to get out early.
Yeah. Now, when you went back, what did you and your neighbors find? Because I can imagine you might have been like just thinking the worst.
Well, you know, in Agoura Hills, most of our homes were okay, but we do have about a dozen homes that were damaged, and seven or eight of them are completely red tagged. And we have emergency operations open today, up and running at the city, even though it's technically a holiday today. Mm-hmm. But really, some of our neighboring communities like Malibu Lake and parts of Westlake Village, and definitely our mountain communities have been hit much, much harder. And we've lost some historic spots in nearby national parks. We lost a one-lane bridge in Old Agoura. And, the Lady Face Mountain that you and I were sitting in front of just a few months ago, it burned all the way down to the base. But she's seen this before, and she'll recover.
Given what you've experienced, and we were out there for 88 cities a few months ago, and you used to talk about how much you love Agoura Hills and how you'd never leave. But considering what you've experienced, how do you feel right now about living in that area?
Well, this is just part of life when you live in mountain communities like this, and that's why you always have to be prepared. And to your last caller, you know, there are things that you can do to fire safe your house and your property. And, you know, like I said the other day, the big thing is to leave when you're asked to leave. That allowed our firefighters and our first responders to do what they were able to do, and that's why our town fared pretty well. I do feel for those who lost everything in the fire. We have to help them rebuild. We have to rebuild the areas around our city. We're tight-knit, so we all know somebody. And then, of course, we're still reeling about Borderline, and so we have a lot of healing to do as a community.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because how do you pick up those pieces? It's been a rough week for you guys.
It's been a rough week, and the hard part was that we all had to scatter in different directions. We're not all back yet. I mean, we still have parts of our community. Calabasas is still under evacuation orders. Topanga, as a as a community, as a Conejo Valley and beyond, we have to come back together so we can heal together, and we will.
That's Deborah Klein Lopez, a resident and city council person elect in Agoura Hills. Deborah, thank you very much.
Thanks, A.
Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I'm A. Martinez. California's midterm election may be over, but there are millions of ballots across the state that are still being counted. To help you make sense of it all, we're back with our voting segment.
Welcome, human.
The Human Voter Guide.
The Human Voter Guide.
Welcome to the Human Voter Guide.
A real person to help with your election questions.
So you don't have to search for answers.
Possible not to dance to that theme song. KPCC political correspondent Mary Plummer is our guide, and she joins me now in studio to answer your questions and talk about the vote count. Hello, Mary.
Hey, A.
All right, let's start with some news that came in over the weekend, and that's regarding the vote count in Congressional District 48. A longtime GOP Congressman Dana Rohrabacher appears to be defeated. He represents a coastal Orange County city such as Laguna Beach and Corona Del Mar. What's the latest on that?
Well, on Saturday morning, Democrat Harley Ruta declared victory over Rohrabacher, and later in the day, the Associated Press called the race. Ruta is currently ahead by about 7,300 votes. This is significant because Rohrabacher has been in Congress for 30 years. He is a prominent backer of President Trump. And this House race was one of the most watched in the country. Democrats really poured millions into it. This is a really big win for them.
Has Rohrabacher conceded, though?
Interesting. You know, I checked with his campaign multiple times in the past couple days, and they tell me Rohrabacher has not conceded. His spokesman says they are still monitoring the vote count and don't plan to make any announcements until after all the votes are counted. And in California, I should say, that could be a while. The last of the eligible vote-by-mail ballots arrived on Friday, and we have one of the slowest vote counts in the country.
All right, so stay tuned for that. Are there any other congressional races that have not been decided?
Yes, there are three other congressional races in California that remain too close to call. In two Southern California races, Republicans are leading Democrats by margins of less than 2,500 votes. Those races are Congressional District 39, that is in Northern Orange County, some voters in LA County and San Bernardino County as well. That's where Republican Young Kim is leading Democrat Gil Cisneros. And then we've got Congressional District 45, that includes Irvine. In that race, Republican incumbent Mimi Walters is leading over Democrat Katie Porter. And then there's a third Central Valley seat where Democrat Josh Harder is leading GOP incumbent Jeff Denham by about 3,300 votes. So several close races still.
All right. Let's move on, Mary, to some issues that voters ran into at the polls. Let's take a listen to Carrie Doggett. She lives in the Miracle Mile area. She's been at the same address for 25 years, but when she went to her polling place on Election Day, she had a problem.
I showed up to vote, and surprisingly, I was told I was vote by mail only. I've never voted by mail in my entire life, and I've never signed up for it. So I had to do a provisional ballot.
Mary, what happened?
You know, we talked to LA County election officials about this, and we're told that while it is a known issue, this was not widespread. Dean Logan, LA County's Registrar of Voters, says he thinks the issue was linked to the DMV. As you may remember, automated voter registration went into effect in April at the DMV, and since then, tens of thousands of voters have had issues with their registration. Carrie tells us she did go get a California Real ID in July at the DMV, so that may have been at play there. The good news is, in California, all of the provisional ballots are counted. But, you know, experiences like this are quite frustrating. If you ran into anything similar, please do report it. That will help the system improve. You can let us know by emailing humanvoterguide@kpcc.org, or you can report it directly to the Secretary of State's office.
Can those provisional ballots be tracked? Can you find out if yours has been counted?
You can. This was one of the commonly asked questions that we got. The answer is yes, but it does take some time. LA County has an online tool that lets you track your provisional ballot after 30 days. You can find that on their website, or again, you can email humanvoterguide@kpcc.org, and we will send you the link. You can also track your vote-by-mail ballot if you're interested.
Now, back in June, over 100,000 voters were left off the rosters in LA County. Were there any widespread problems during this election?
Thankfully, no, nothing of that scale. But there were other issues reported. We heard from voters who ran into precinct ballot readers that weren't working correctly. And we also had reports that some polling places were running low on provisional ballots.
One more thing, Mary, before you go. How much longer will the vote count take?
You know, across the state, changes in voting rules and an increased number of people voting by mail have really slowed things down. We still have over 4.5 million votes remaining to be counted in California. So at least another week, likely two, wow. And election officials actually have until December 7th to finish it all up.
All right. That's Mary Plummer. She's KPCC's political correspondent. You can find her on Twitter at Mary Plummer. That's at Mary Plummer. Mary, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Back to the Woolsey Fire now. From Malibu to West Hills in the San Fernando Valley, 250,000 LA County residents have been evacuated. But its flames have also touched some iconic sets in the entertainment world. Let's go on the lot.
God is my witness.
Stick your head out and yell.
You want a chocolate?
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
The Hollywood Reporter's Rebecca Keegan is on the line for more. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, A.
Now, a Western town at Paramount Ranch in Agoura Hills, that has burned down. Tell us why this set was so iconic and what's been lost now that it's gone.
Well, the ranch at Western Town was built in 1927 as a set for cowboy movies, and it had everything you'd expect to see for those films: a saloon, a jail, a train depot, dusty streets designed for dueling. Most recently, it provided some of the sets for the HBO show Westworld. Clint Eastwood shot parts of American Sniper there. In the 90s, they shot the TV show Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. So it's really a well-used set.
And one of the coolest things about it, Rebecca, is that it's a public place. You could just walk right through it. You don't need
right.
to. Yeah, that's what stinks about this whole thing.
Yeah.
And there's also reports circulating about how the home where The Bachelor and Bachelorette were filmed might have been damaged. We reached out to ABC for an update. We have not heard back. What do we know about the current status of those places?
Well, a reporter for USA Today visited the mansion over the weekend and shared some pictures which suggest this house can still host a rose ceremony.
Glad.
And the ABC has not officially commented that we know of, but I think it's worth noting that like many film and TV locations in L.A., when the house is not occupied by people looking for everlasting love on camera, it's a home that belongs to a family who were evacuated.
Additionally, Guillermo del Toro's Bleak House was damaged, but only with smoke. What sort of memorabilia is there that survived the fire?
Well, Bleak House is a space in Agoura where del Toro writes and finds inspiration. He also brings artists who work on his films there to draw. He keeps more than 700 pieces of original art there, like concept art from Disney films, drawings by H.R. Giger, Frankenstein sculptures, Alfred Hitchcock memorabilia, skulls. He's got a lot of skulls. So a lot of sort of quirky, interesting things, particularly to fans of genre films.
Now, it wasn't just movie sets threatened by the fire. Celebrities' homes were also in danger. A lot of them took to social media to update the public who has been affected by this.
Yeah, well, everyone from, you know, Lady Gaga to multiple Kardashians shared imagery from their own evacuations. Gerard Butler shared a picture of the charred remains of his home. At one point, Charlie Sheen was having difficulty locating his father, Martin Sheen, and a news crew later found Martin and his wife taking shelter at Zuma Beach, where so many people and animals went to get away from the flames.
You tell me, Rebecca, but I can't remember a time or a fire that has affected so many show business structures. Or you know, it seems like, yes, fires are part of Southern California life, but Hollywood's been affected more in this one than ever before, maybe.
Well, it's interesting. There have been major fires at important Hollywood sites like the Bradbury Building in the 47 and the Shrine Auditorium in 1920. There have been backlot fires in the 80s on the Paramount lot. A fire destroyed the New York sets that had been used for The Godfather and Breakfast at Tiffany's. And there was one on the Universal lot just a few years ago, which destroyed the clock tower in Back to the Future. So, you know, obviously these wildfires are devastating and costly when they involve people's homes. When it comes to Hollywood, often the greatest sense of loss in a fire is to nostalgia.
Now, before we let you go, some quick entertainment news that isn't about the fire. This week in the Coen Brothers movie, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs became the first Netflix film to hit theaters since the company started a new strategy. Tell us about that.
Right, well, the company has done what the streaming service calls its day-and-date strategy. And that's just the idea that when they release a movie in a theater, it also goes on the service immediately. Yeah. Theater owners hate it. So do some filmmakers. Netflix, for the first time, is modifying that. They opened The Ballad of Buster Scruggs in a tiny number of theaters this weekend, a week before premiering it on their service. They've also announced plans to do that with three other films, most notably Alfonso Cuarón's movie Roma, which is a likely Oscar contender, and which will get the largest window with 3 weeks.
It's a weird balance, right, Rebecca? Because this thing, it goes on Netflix November 16th. I don't know. Maybe I'll just wait till I get it on my phone.
Which is exactly why theater owners don't like Netflix. And I think Alfonso Cuarón is probably hoping that you'll get your butt out to a theater to see it, too. He certainly didn't design Roma to be watched on a phone. But people's home theaters are pretty exquisite nowadays. So maybe that's a compromise. That's certainly what Netflix thinks.
I'm going to the movies. I'm not going to watch it on my phone. I was just messing. Rebecca Keegan is with The Hollywood Reporter. She joins us every Monday to talk about the business of Hollywood. Rebecca, thanks a lot.
Thank you.